Just a quick note before we start the episode. Half of this podcast lives in Texas, and while we are both safe and unaffected, thousands of our fellow Texans aren't. Some reports are saying that the devastation caused by Hurricane Harvey could cost more than Katrina and Sandy combined. Houston and the Gulf Coast need your help. United Way has established a Harvey Recovery Fund that we encourage our listeners to donate to. You can find it at unitedway.org/hurricane-harvey.
United Way provides funding targeting vulnerable populations like children, elderly, families in poverty, abused animals, and they will be there for their community during and in the months and years following the disaster.
And we bring you this podcast without any ads, without asking for donations. So if you've ever gotten any value from this podcast, consider donating to that rather than giving money to us. They need help right now, and it might be Texas now, but it's going to be somewhere else later on. So this is a time when people come together to help each other.
Yeah. And one more time, that URL to donate is unitedway.org/hurricane-harvey.
And we'll put it on the website and in the description for the episode for you guys.
Yes, we'll link it there.
All right. Let me just launch right in.
Yep.
Okay. Hello, and welcome to the Cut the Cord podcast, episode 26. I'm Amanda, and I'm joined by some other streaming media nerds, Ryan.
Hello.
And Hannah.
Howdy.
Together, we take on television for those who have cast off the tyranny of their local cable provider. Each week, we gather here to find a great show to watch from the often overwhelming variety of shows to choose from. We review the prior week's selection, then we pick a new show and do it all over again. This is a review show, so there will be spoilers, but we'll try to make them brief. This week's show is Amazon's The Tick. Our companion song is the opening theme by Chris Bacon. Let's take a listen.
I like that the song is slightly different than the original, but you still immediately know that it's The Tick.
Right. It has that sort of spy feeling.
Yeah.
But like silly, still silly.
Very like 1960s Batman opening theme song sense to it.
I think that's appropriate.
Definitely.
It takes itself a little too seriously, just like The Tick himself. The Tick was created by Ben Edlund. He actually originated the character in 1986 when he was in high school.
Oh, wow.
Right?
Now I feel bad about myself.
I mean, I feel bad about myself because I haven't done anything cool and I'm like 30. But that doesn't surprise me that The Tick was created by somebody in high school.
Nothing like a child prodigy. Ben Edlund, an Olympic gymnast, to make you feel self-conscious about how much you've accomplished.
Yeah.
So The Tick was originally the mascot of a comic book store's newsletter. I think a store in Massachusetts.
Yeah, there's a series. It's New England Comics. There's a series of stores. And also, they're relaunching The Tick this month. So if you check out the Four Color Nerds comics review, we're going to be reviewing that as well. So.
Oh, cool. Synergy.
Double dip of The Tick.
So Ben Edlund, he went on to become a writer and a director and a producer on many nerd cult type shows, including Firefly and Angel, The Venture Brothers, Supernatural, and Gotham. He has had a huge career since he created The Tick. And The Tick went on to become its own comic book, and then it was a beloved animated series in the 90s. And then I think in the early 2000s, it was a live action show on Fox.
Yes, not beloved.
Not as beloved.
Who was The Tick?
That was Patrick Warburton.
It's Putty from Seinfeld, which is pretty much damn perfect casting, but the show itself was not that great.
Oh my God. Patrick Warburton is as close to the living human Tick as you can get.
Embodiment of The Tick. Yeah, too bad that wasn't a good show.
Oh. Now we have this rebooted live action version on Amazon. And some of the things I thought were interesting in the behind the scenes credits, David Fury, who I know mostly as a really good writer on Buffy, is one of the executive producers and writers. And both Peter Serafinowicz and Patrick Warburton, who was the last person to play The Tick, get producer credits, which is interesting. I wonder what he did.
That's cool. Maybe he consulted on the costume or something.
Yeah. Maybe he was Peter Serafinowicz's voice coach.
Oh, yeah. Because his voicing is very similar to Patrick Warburton. Like, it took me, I was like, is Patrick Warburton doing a voiceover of Peter Serafinowicz's body?
The voice of the Tick is fairly consistent across the animated series, the 2000 series, and this. They all sound very, very similar.
Right. I would say the character is pretty similar. It's one of the few consistencies between all of the versions of the show. Everything else seems to change. All the side characters seems to change. Yes. Kind of the overall tone sort of changes every time. But the Tick himself is always basically the same guy.
Yes.
I watched this series and then went on to try and watch the cartoon. And the cartoon guy was a little bit more zany.
Well, yeah, he's more amplified for sure.
I preferred this version of the Tick, to be honest.
I can understand why they didn't replicate some of the more famous catchphrases and jokes from the cartoon version. Like, I can't imagine Peter Serafinowicz just yelling spoon as he rushes into battle.
Although I did kind of miss that. I thought that would be great.
It was one of the most quoted things around my household when I was a kid. We would yell spoon a lot.
Spoon! Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
I just felt like the Tick was the embodiment of the Penguin of Doom commenter. If anybody doesn't know what that is, Google it right quick. It's a treat.
And so we have, obviously, Peter Serafinowicz, the amazing Peter Serafinowicz as the Tick. He has a resume as long as your arm, but you would probably know him from Guardians of the Galaxy and also from Shaun of the Dead, which is one of my favorite movies of all time.
Also recently, Spy. He had a pretty great role in that one.
Oh, I forgot about Spy. He was so good in Spy. He also, there was this very short-lived TV show called Running Wild with Will Arnett.
Oh.
We also have Griffin Newman as Arthur Everest. He is known for not a lot of stuff yet. I think this might be his breakout role. Just some guest roles on TV and then a recurring role on HBO's Vinyl. He also hosts a really funny podcast that I've just started to get into as we've been watching this.
I think he nails the inherent neuroses of Arthur.
I mean, the story is more about Arthur.
Absolutely.
Arthur is the main character. He's the protagonist.
Yes.
He's the emotional arc that we're following, and it's his pathos and his mountain to climb.
Yeah, the Tick has no growth or development. He is the Tick.
Yeah.
He doesn't change.
He's the essence of the Tick.
Yeah, I don't know if this is a spoiler, but he doesn't have a past either, so he's just like in a fugue state.
That's pretty consistent through other versions of the Tick. In the comics, he's a escaped mental patient.
Oh!
And then in the TV series, he has, like, just passed his superhero exams and been assigned to his first thing.
But he also doesn't talk about his past.
They hint because of all the head trauma.
Oh, the
head trauma. He doesn't remember anything.
Oh, Lord. But in this one, it's kind of like he's in a fugue state. He's like, oh, I have a past. I don't know.
I have a theory about that, but...
What's your theory?
My theory is that the Tick has been essentially willed into existence by Arthur. That he has always been with Arthur, and when Arthur needs him, that's when he appears.
So he's willed into existence. Yeah, because I kind of, like, the first couple of episodes, before anybody really interacted with the Tick, aside from Arthur, I was like, oh, he's in his head. I don't know if he's a real person or, like, a really complex hallucination.
I think that's the strongest part of the show.
Yeah, Dot sees him. It's like, oh, he is real. I'm so relieved for Arthur. Because that would be bad news bears if he was having a delusion / hallucination that was telling him to do things. Like, that's bad.
Full on walking, talking hallucination.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one of the go to the hospital, go directly to the hospital moments. If the voices start talking to each other or they start telling you to do things, it's bad.
Do we think that it is PTSD related after his traumatic backstory?
Yeah, because he did develop the Tick. Right after. Oh, the Tick. Oh, I just got that connection.
I think it definitely has to do with that trauma. But the Tick, like, there's a scene where there's a little tiny blue dot, which I think maybe is the actual tick-sized Tick when he's a child. He's in the room with him and his dad comes in. So he was there before.
Okay.
Okay. So we don't think that the Tick is an actual superhero who has had something bad happen to him and is now kind of glommed on to Arthur randomly.
I don't think so in this version.
I don't know. Well, yeah, I guess we'll have to wait and see.
He really doesn't exist outside of Arthur.
Right.
He's not a creation of Arthur's imagination or delusion. I think he does not exist without being in Arthur's presence, essentially.
So Arthur does have a superpower. It's willing the Tick into existence.
I don't know that he's literally willing him into existence. I do think that they have some sort of connection.
I think the Tick has no purpose or direction without Arthur.
Right. He explicitly says that his thinking gets more cloudy when he's not around Arthur, which is why he keeps getting drawn back to him, much to Arthur's dismay.
Oh, he's basically like Dory.
Yes.
He is like Dory. He's even blue. Oh, sad.
Now we just need a team up, like a buddy cop movie.
Just keep swimming.
Well, yeah, like the forgetful kind of zany character, and then you have the neurotic best friend.
Yeah, yes. Yep. Yeah, I did not think about those parallels, but there are many.
Mm. Just want to round out the rest of the cast.
Yeah, so we have Valerie Curry as Dot, Arthur's sister, who has sort of a moral quandary in front of her when she is being slowly pulled into some nefarious activities. She's a EMT.
Yes.
Who's in medical school.
Right, so she wants to be a doctor, but she is getting kind of, against her will, looped into some bad stuff, some bad spoilery stuff. We have Brendan Hines as Superion, who is the more classic Superman style hero. Actually, he doesn't get a ton of screen time.
No, he's above the world, essentially. He does not really interact with the world. You know, he just does that Superman thing where you float above the earth and listen for things to happen and then comes down.
So he's Fortress of Solitude Superman.
Yes.
But he does come into play later on as a plot point. Mm-hmm. Again, spoilers. And then, very notably, Jackie Earle Haley as the Terror, who we see mostly in flashbacks. He is notable from Watchmen and Nightmare on Elm Street, the reboot, and the TV show Preacher. And he is almost without fail cast as weird, creepy, messed up in some way characters, whether they're protagonists or villains. And he's always great.
It's a little over the top for my taste, especially because like the tone of the show is more grounded and realistic. So he and the Tick stand out as the most comic book of the characters, which as the hero and villain makes kind of sense for them to be a little over the top.
Right. They're the two cartoon characters.
Yes.
In this real world, in this world populated by actual humans. I liked his voice. I liked the way he did that sort of wheeze sound.
Yeah.
And it's almost like a southern accent or something. Mm-hmm. It made him seem a little more charismatic, despite all the heavy prosthetics. And we have Yara Martinez as Ms. Lint, who I know mostly from Jane the Virgin. She's been in a few other things, including True Detective.
Also with facial scarring.
Yes. There's a facial scarring theme. Her main power is electricity related, and it comes with a fatal flaw of having a major static cling problem.
Very major.
I thought that was kind of cool how when her bracelets to control that start malfunctioning, you start seeing the little particles of dust and lint floating around her.
And that she stops being able to sort of control the sparks that she get when she touches metal.
She has a ridiculous roommate, ex-husband, who she shares her lair with.
Brian Greenberg is Derek.
She's got some good comedic chops there. She's a good straight man.
She's very good in Jane the Virgin, too. I kept thinking of her as Louisa every time I saw her on screen. She's sort of a similar, in that show, sort of a similar tortured, not quite a villain, not quite a hero type of character, where she does bad things, but is still sympathetic a lot of the time.
Yes, like there's obviously going to be a time where she has to either fully become evil incarnate, like they say, and side with the Terror completely, or she's going to have a turn.
Right. She has this possibly misplaced loyalty to the Terror as sort of a father figure.
That's the vibe I got.
Despite the fact that he's been dead for, what, 15 years?
Yeah, she never branched out on her own or rose to power.
In his absence, he left a void behind that she didn't fill. She didn't step up. She let Ramses, who's played by Michael Cerveris, as the local mob boss with a really dumb ancient Egyptian theme to his gang.
Branding.
And he's Ramses the IV. He isn't even the good Ramses.
And then last but not least, we have Alan okay, how do you pronounce his last name? Is it Tudyk or
Tudyk?
Tudyk or Tudyk?
Tudyk.
Every time I say his name, I always feel like I'm saying it wrong.
He's in everything.
Alan Tudyk as the voice of Danger Boat. Wait, I skipped Scott Speiser, who plays Overkill, who's sort of your classic anti-hero. And then Danger Boat is Overkill's, not his boat, but his sidekick, or his roommate?
His roommate, yeah.
I guess? He achieved sentience in 2012, so now they're roommates.
It's pretty funny.
I was getting tons of shades of character from the Star Wars movie.
Reminds me of Knight Rider, of Kit.
Yes.
Mm.
Yes.
He also seemed to have genuine...
Definitely. Not so much his role in Moana.
His very layered and emotional role in Moana. He was robbed of an Academy Award nomination for The Chicken. It was interesting, actually, the way they portrayed that relationship between Overkill and Danger Boat. It seemed really caring and authentic, and Danger Boat is worried about his roommate and his safety.
I liked Danger Boat. I thought that was a great addition.
Yeah, I really liked him. I want more Danger Boat.
So let's talk about how Peter Serafinowicz does as the Tick, and also compared to, for those of us who have seen previous Ticks, how do we like him? How does he rank?
Well, first of all, I think he does a very good job in it. Physically, he can fill the role of the Tick. You know, they've got the chin prosthetic for him to really enhance that. He has the height and the physique to carry that off.
Yeah, I had no idea. He's 6'6".
Yeah, he's a big man.
He's a big boy.
And the voice sounds just like the Tick, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Totally perfect. His American accent is
It's spot on. Pretty good.
It's not like when they try and redo the Muppets and sometimes they just don't sound right. This sounds pretty spot on.
Trying to think of other really bad American accents done by Brits. Everybody in Doctor Who.
Anytime they go to America in Doctor Who.
Oh, my God.
I think he ranks less than the cartoon, but more than the 2000 series.
Yeah.
Oh, you think he's a better Tick than Patrick Warburton?
It's actually hard to say, because I think the show is better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
So it's hard to separate those two.
Yes. Patrick Warburton is just such a... In real life, I feel like he walks around like that and is like, Destiny, just to random strangers on the street. That just seems like who he is.
Well, and he was really great in Lemony Snicket, A Series of Unfortunate Events, when we watched that.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was really good casting for that, too.
And he's also in Emperor's New Groove. He's Kronk.
He's Kronk.
And Kronk is sort of the Tick, if the Tick was the sidekick of the supervillain instead of the hero.
Yeah, I see that. Yeah, he plays slightly dim badasses a lot.
Where would you put this in the order?
It's hard. I think he's tied with Patrick Warburton. I like this better than the more outlandish cartoon version from the 90s. As much as I love that show.
Oh, you're killing me.
I honestly couldn't handle the cartoon. Like, I watched one episode and was like, all right, I'm going to go mow the lawn.
I went back and watched a few highlights in prep for this, and I remembered why I loved it then, but I couldn't quite sum it up the same feeling now.
Yeah, my husband was like, oh, it just didn't hold up as well as I thought it would.
I still am a huge fan of the animated series. I like it. Although this is not bad, I think I like the animated series better than this, but this is very good as its own thing.
So that leads us to the tone of this series being a lot different than both of the series that came before it.
Yes.
Yeah, it's pretty dark.
It's darker, it's more realistic, it's more emotional and almost more earnest and sweet at points.
Mm-hmm.
I like that the Tick and the Terror are, like we said earlier, basically cartoon characters in a realistic world.
Yeah, that's nice. And I liked how they focused on Arthur a lot. They really centered it on him in a way that I didn't get from the first episode of the Tick.
No, Arthur is not the main character of the Tick animated series.
So is the Tick suit part of the Tick, or is it a suit?
Who knows?
I mean, they kind of allude to that question, but they don't answer it.
Because they're like, are you a man in a suit? Are you a robot? Are you like a mutant Tick? Like, what are you? And he's like, good question, chum.
He says, am I never naked or am I never not naked?
And then when he gets into the fight with Overkill, Overkill goes for the antenna, and that seems to be a weak point.
Yes.
Right.
Which is canon.
Yeah.
That's good. I really liked that. It was really funny.
Sensitive.
So the creator, I think, who said that the Tick was inspired by Adam West and his portrayal of Batman.
Oh, R.I.P.
Yeah.
The sort of over-the-top delivery and the bombastic tone.
the earnestness. It is, I mean, directly a parody of that kind of thing. He even uses a lot of the same catchphrases. I wish they had actually stuck with him being a figment of Arthur's imagination. I thought that was really creative. But then when you find out that he just disappears when he doesn't want to be seen by other people, sort of also parodying Batman, that Batman always does that. Like, you'll be talking, yeah, and then you turn around and continue talking to him and he's gone, kind of carrying that forward.
Yeah, I feel like they're more naturally irritated when it happens too. Like, in Batman, it's like, oh, he did it again. But this one's like, oh, yeah, man.
In Batman, it's almost something that you grudgingly respect him for. Like, oh, that Batman. Look how sneaky he is.
I wish we had gotten more of the other characters from the animated series. Mm-hmm. But I kind of see how it's harder to do them in a more realistic thing. But I do miss, like, Deflator Mouse. I do miss American Maid.
Yeah. I miss Chairface Chippendale.
The Mad Bomber, What Bombs at Midnight.
I was scrolling through the cast of the cartoon on IMDb, and I was just like, everyone is in this. So, yeah, there's a lot, yeah, of just one-off random superheroes. So that would have been, yes, funny. A lot of them were in this first episode, so it just kind of made it watered it down and made it. It was just like, oh, look, another superhero, which is part of the shtick, right. I get, but
yeah,
it made it harder to follow.
There's not enough real estate for them to do the, right, sort of monster of the week or hero of the week style that, yes, they did in the animated series. They're trying to get across an arc.
They're trying to tell a much more personal story.
Right. They're doing a narrative arc across the entire season, rather than something a little more episodic.
That was one problem I did have with the show, is the narrative arc that they have, is we got essentially act one, you know, of your three act structure. We got act two, but I feel like we're missing act three. It's, yes, definitely too short.
Yeah.
I wanted more.
Too short by a lot. We're getting more episodes in the fall. I don't think there's an actual release date yet.
I wanted more, but not in the good way of like, ooh, this is so good.
I thought that the thing with the giant man, very large man, was kind of wasted. I didn't think that landed.
That went nowhere.
I really didn't think that landed very well.
I think they were trying to establish more about Superion as a character, but it felt like a totally aborted plot.
I thought that was funny. I want to see more of the very large man, and he's also just very naked.
Very nude. He's an extremely nude man.
I did enjoy the sight gag, how they always have like a tree in the way or something like that.
At one point, they actually have to blur out his two-story tall penis.
I liked how the tick called out the, is he the anti-hero or is he a villain for overkill? He called out, yes, the trope, and I really enjoyed that.
It's very meta. It's always been a little bit meta, but this one feels more meta than the previous ones were. The tick is aware that he's in a hero's journey and that Arthur has certain duties as the designated protagonist, mm-hmm, to fulfill.
Yes. It's almost like the way that Deadpool is aware that he's in fiction.
Yeah. Comic awareness is one, right, of his superpowers. Yes.
Well, and I like that he actually tells Arthur, like, oh, you're on the rejection of the hero's quest right now.
Right.
He knows, yeah, narratively what's happening. And I like the parts with the tick encouraging him to, the, you know, Destiny's calling, pick up the phone.
Yeah.
I like those things. And then I also like with Dot and his sister that Dot at the beginning is very protective of him. And then at the end, Arthur ends up being protective of her and they use the same lines on each other.
Besides just uncovering whether or not the terror is still alive, the main plot revolves around keeping this magical bulletproof suit away from evil. And then Arthur finally journeying toward accepting the hero's call and becoming who the tick, at least, thinks he's meant.
And I also like that the other heroes recognize the heroic in Arthur long before he does.
Right.
That they recognize, yeah, that he's smart and able to figure things out, which is not their strong suit.
Which is another classic hero trope.
Yeah, he does the thinking and then he becomes not indispensable to them, but he's definitely enhances both Overkill and the tick, their effectiveness.
And he is on his quest to get revenge, maybe, or we're not sure, uncover the supervillain who killed his father, which I don't think is a spoiler because we find it out in the first episode. Not really a spoiler. It's kind of the establishing event that tells us, that determines what Arthur's character is going to be.
Mm-hmm. So it's basically the Fantastic Four gets their jet dropped on his dad.
Yeah.
There is a super intelligent dog that isn't there because he's getting dewormed at the time. I did think that interview that he had was really funny. He's talking about the survivor's guilt that he has and the journey that he's had to go on. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, that was good.
I also kind of like that Arthur, in this 6-episode arc, Arthur has two nemeses. One is the terror and the other is poor user interface design.
Yes.
Yes.
I've been there.
Bad UI. Oh, yeah? Have you plummeted three stories because of bad user interface design? Oh, that's upsetting.
How does Snapchat work? I'm about to die. I need to Snapchat. I don't know how this works.
Oh, Austin sounds really dangerous.
All right, so let's move on. I have devised a game for us to play. We're going to play a round of Would You Rather Bad Superhero Powers Edition. So okay. I'm going to pose a Would You Rather, and you have to tell me which one you would rather and why. Mm. So here we go. Here are your choices. Either you can fly, but only at walking speed, or you're incredibly strong, but only for 1 minute every day.
Oh, so I'd be Danny Rand?
I do not get that reference.
It's Iron Fist.
Oh, okay.
Iron Fist, yeah.
Is it the same minute every day? Do you get to choose? Do you not know when it's going to happen?
No, let's say it's the same minute every day.
Okay, so 2:37 p.m.
Okay.
Well, I've always thought flying is a really dumb power on its own, because like you can get to wherever it is, but then what are you going to do? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And this one, you don't even get there fast. That right. seems bad.
But you can go up.
Yeah.
So is it like an escalator in the sky that you're going up, or are you just zooming straight up?
Yeah, you just go up slowly.
Hmm.
I mean, I can walk pretty fast, and then you can get there faster.
Well, yeah, you do marathons and races, Hannah. The only marathons I do are these shows.
Do you do walking marathons?
I'm a marathoner. Well, there was a lot of walking in that marathon. I did take 7 hours and 15 minutes to do it, so there was lots of walking. It would have been shorter if I had been able to fly over the building.
Oh, that's true. You could have cheated and cut the course a little bit, cut the corners.
That would be terrible. And then that blog, Marathon Cheaters, would have found me.
Mm.
You know, as the crow flies versus as the wolf runs. Okay, or be incredibly strong for only 60 seconds per day. That seems even less useful to me. Like, sure, you could do cool things, but you could plan it.
It only takes one punch, Hannah.
Yeah, but I would have to time my fight around that one time.
That's assuming that your goal here is to defeat evil. Your goal could just be to...
Yeah. What other goal is there, chum?
Live my life.
I was thinking more like move your heavy furniture.
Sure. You're not going to be in a fist fight with evil every day. Someday you just got to move the fridge.
Right.
But your friends would probably call you to help them move during that minute of power.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like having a pickup.
That's the worst. And they don't say anything about delayed onset muscle soreness, which is DOMS, and that stuff sucks.
Also, there is the potential that if you did try to fight evil during those 60 seconds, the person that you're fighting could figure out the trick and come after you in the other 23 hours and 59 minutes of the day when you're not super strong.
Which is why you learn all forms of kung fu, like Danny Rand.
Danny Rand should not be your heroic ideal.
Really shouldn't, though. I feel like I would be a better Iron Fist than Danny Rand. Like, let's be honest.
I think you could defend Kunlun.
Yeah, I would have defended Kunlun.
I'm going to choose super strength.
Okay, Hannah?
I'm going to choose flying.
Yep. I didn't want to tell you guys this, but there is a correct answer, and it's flying.
This is rigged.
It was a trick question.
All right, point to Hannah, I guess.
I win!
Okay, next one. Here are your choices. You can read minds, but you can't turn it off. Or you have super hearing, but you can't turn it off.
Oh.
These are both incredibly annoying.
Reading minds would be horrible.
Yeah.
Society and relationships are built on a solid foundation of lies.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Or if at least just not knowing what they're thinking about you every second of every day.
If you could read my mind, you would never stop slapping me. So.
Boobs, 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 boobs.
Pretty much.
See, yeah, I don't need that shit.
Yeah, super hearing would be annoying. You might be burdened by being able to hear things but not do anything about them.
I live in the flight path of DFW, so I would have
to. Oh, yeah. You'd have to go isolate yourself in the woods or something.
I would do super hearing.
I would also choose super hearing. Telepathy that you can't control, or any telepathy at all, sounds horrible.
Yes, correct. Both correct.
I mean, the reading minds thing would make my job a little bit easier, but it would also make it harder.
My reasoning is that you can plug your ears if you absolutely have to. You can't plug your brain.
That's what drugs are for, Amanda.
That is the plot for one of the X-Men movies. Professor X uses drugs to dull his telepathic senses, so.
Aww, that makes me sad.
Do you want to pose a couple of these?
All right, so I guess that round goes 2-1 to Hannah.
I didn't start out intending to keep score here, but I think I enjoy it.
All right, so let me pose one to you guys. You're immortal, but you are not invulnerable. Or you're invulnerable, but you have a shortened lifespan.
So the immortal in this scenario, would they recover if they're injured?
You cannot die. You suffer and heal as a normal person.
If you were given an injury that would paralyze a normal person, you wouldn't recover from that. You would live forever as a paralyzed person.
Correct. Until you live long enough for them to do some kind of gene therapy or whatever, all of your injuries remain, but you survive. Or you're invulnerable, but you only have, let's say, a month.
A month?
Oh, a month?
You have a very shortened lifespan, but you cannot be hurt.
That changes my answer.
Okay, I decide to be an elf. They're not invulnerable. They can be killed. You just bear the wounds of all time. Do you get arthritis?
Yeah, do you age?
You do not age or suffer any effects of that aging.
If you live forever, the probability that you do something that completely immobilizes you at some point, or like enough injuries build up.
Or get trapped somewhere.
Right, it becomes inevitable. Right?
You can't heal.
You can heal as a normal person.
Okay.
So if you can get yourself to a hospital.
I still pick immortality, but not invulnerability.
I would pick the invulnerability if it was a normal human lifespan, just not immortality.
Mm-hmm.
Or even if it was maybe 50 years. But a month, yeah. Really?
It's short.
What would you do with that month?
Anything. Nothing could stop you. What could you do if nothing could stop you and you had nothing to fear?
I guess I would be like an assassin for a month.
Whoa.
That got dark.
Like a dextery assassin. But for like dictators.
We've learned some things today about Hannah.
And then I die after a month.
That's the darkest timeline. I definitely have to go with immortal, but not invulnerable. Because I feel like if you wait long enough, you'll get to the point where we all get uploaded into the cloud. All of our consciousnesses become digitized. So then you don't have to worry about it anymore.
Hmm.
Kind of do genuinely have that as a goal. I'm hoping for an artificial intelligence revolution in our lifetimes.
You want the boat?
Yes, I want to be Danger Boat.
Goals.
I want to be Danger Boat.
Day, Danger Boat.
Oh, man. Amanda, you would be a really great Danger Boat. Okay, so this one's mine. You can grow your fingernails real long at will, but they're just as strong as your normal nails. Or you control a certain brand of drywall, like you're a drywall bender in the Avatar The Last Airbender, but only that certain brand / formulation of drywall.
Okay, questions. I have many. With the fingernail scenario, yes. Do you extend and retract them at will, a la Wolverine, except from fingernails?
No, they just grow. If you want them to be shorter, you have to cut them off.
And you grow them instantaneously, right? They just like shoot out?
Yeah, they just like shoot out. So it's like Wolverine only. You can't retract them.
Then they're that way until you get some industrial nail clippers.
Yes. They're just as strong as your real nails.
Would they break under their own weight at a certain
point? Yeah.
And if they did so, would they rip your own fingernails?
Perhaps.
Oh.
I'm having flashbacks to Ozark. That sounds so uncomfortable. Have you ever grown your fingernail long enough and then accidentally bent it backwards? It's the worst feeling in the world.
It's the worst. But you have control over it. So I guess you could like sharpen them to a point and then grow them through somebody's eye.
Yeah, you could.
Wow. I'm intrigued by this drywall bending.
Or you could drywall bend them.
So you're kind of like Magneto, but for drywall.
Well, but one brand of drywall, and it might not be a popular brand.
Well, if I have anything to say about it, my empire will conquer the globe.
So you can't reliably walk into a building knowing that your powers are going to work
right
in any given scenario. In The Last Airbender, aren't there tribes for each, like water and fire, and it's the drywall
I feel like I'm being drawn into a cosmic struggle older than myself. But you know, I'm going to answer the call and drywall bend. That sounds pretty amazing.
The fingernails thing would be pretty cool if I started taking vitamins.
Yeah, with the fingernails thing, I would want to use them for whatever purpose I'm using them for and then cut them as soon as possible. Right. No chance of injury to nail beds. I pick fingernails. Ryan, fingernails?
No, drywall bending.
Really? Drywall bending? Drywall bending.
Just think of the possibilities.
What would you do with drywall bending?
What couldn't I do with drywall bending?
So explain what you would do with the drywall bending.
So I'm assuming it's like Magneto, but with drywall. That's what I'm picturing in my head. So I can rip apart buildings.
Certain buildings.
I can have my lair.
You can make drywall armor for yourself.
You could just attract all the drywall to your person.
Yeah, I think it would be pretty amazing.
It would really come in handy in Houston right now. Like,
they really need a drywall bender in the area. It's not the hero you need or the hero you deserve.
It's just a guy who has a weird superpower.
All right.
Okay. So, let's rate the show. I really, really enjoyed it. I'm going to give it 4.5 out of 5 missing spoons. Sad.
I will give it 3.5 what bombs at midnight.
All references to a show that we're not reviewing.
I love the animated series, so.
I'm going to give it a 2.5. Ooh, sensitive antenna.
So, should you watch that?
I would say yes.
I say yes.
I say maybe. If you're into the cartoon, I think you should watch it.
I think you should watch it if you have an open mind.
I think it's its own thing, so I don't think you need to... Well, I don't know. The one person who didn't watch the cartoon didn't really like it that much, so... Maybe right. I'm overestimating how much it stands on its own.
I thought it was okay. Like, that is dead middle.
You're entitled to your opinion.
I am entitled to my opinion. Thank you for encouraging me, Amanda.
You're welcome.
I feel so much more courageous now.
Feel your feelings, Hannah.
Yeah. All right, Amanda. I'm just going to sit with this for a second. All right.
Making your way in the world today.
Takes everything you got.
Taking a break from all your worries.
Sure would help a lot.
Wouldn't you like to get away? So, Amanda, you want to explain the new...
Yeah, this is the point at which we would normally all pitch show ideas and then vote on them, but we're actually changing to a new system as of this episode. So we're going to just rotate each episode. Each person is going to pick a show that they're really excited about and host and sort of take over that episode. So Ryan is going
to
be first up.
Yeah, so the show that I want to watch is a Netflix show called What Happened to Monday. So this is a sci-fi, not too distant future dystopia where, due to overpopulation, families are only allowed to have one child. And this family, I think they go to a fertility clinic and they end up having 7 identical daughters. But if the government finds out about it, they're going to be in trouble. Maybe they'll kill the kids. Not really clear. Each daughter is allowed out one day of the week, right? So you have, you know, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and so on. And one day when Monday is going to, I believe it's, she's going to school, she's murdered or she goes missing. And there's this mystery of who did it and how are they reacting to the fact that then on Tuesday there's someone new. So they're trying to unravel this and figure out what's going on. It looks interesting to me as an idea. I like dystopian sci-fi.
Me too.
It looks a little bit Orphan Black.
Orphan Black, Children of Men. Those are the things that it kind of reminds me of. So I think it looks pretty cool. I would like some sci-fi.
How long is it? Do you know?
It's a movie. So 2 hours, hour and a half.
And it's on Netflix?
Yes.
All right. Sounds exciting. So that was The Tick. You can find all kinds of nerd shenanigans, including our other podcast, Four Color Nerds Comic Book Reviews, at fourcolornerds.com or our Facebook page. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram. You can find the podcast on iTunes and Google Play Music.
On Stitcher.
On SoundCloud.
And on Podcast Addict.
Be sure to rate.
And subscribe. Review. Be sure to come back next week for another episode. Until then, keep streaming, nerds.